On May 1st, 1974, a town disappeared. It was a small town in Greenland. Nothing flashy, just a handful of red and blue houses on the edge of a fjord at the top of the world. This one town, so seemingly insignificant to the rest of the world, is now a symbol of a huge crisis. Greenland has one of the world's highest rates of suicide. And the reason for that goes back to what happened to towns such as this one. Rebecca Hersher brings us the story of a lost community, its lost men, and the improbable heroes who survived.
Anda Paulson greets everyone he meets with the concerned smile of a social worker. Like, he just wants to make sure you're okay.
Hey.
As we sit down to talk, he's reassuringly calm for someone who's about to tell the story of a tragedy. I remember May 1974, he says. I was 14. That spring, Paulson's hometown, that village on a fjord, fell victim to a new policy. Denmark, the colonial ruler of Greenland, was closing small towns to centralize the spread-out population. We had to leave our home, says Anda. They could stay if they wanted, but there would be no electricity, no school, no store. Paulson, his sister, and his mother moved to the capital, Nuuk, and the people there didn't exactly welcome them.
We were mocked and we were called mean names because we came from a small village. A lot of people got beaten up, so if you want to be accepted, you had to fight. I was good at fitting in into my class. That's how I survived, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
Take note of that word. He survived. Because it's around this time that the suicide rate in Greenland shot up. When Anda was born, the rate was basically zero. By the time he left high school, suicide was a leading cause of death for young men. In 1985, at least 50 people killed themselves in Greenland. That might sound small, but the total population now is just 56,000. In the U.S., it would be like if last year everyone in the city of, say, Lincoln, Nebraska, killed themselves. And experts agree that on a macro level, one of the reasons for Greenland's suicide spike was the upheaval that comes from closing towns and moving people. Which brings us back to Paulson's hometown, Kangiq. In the decade and a half after it closed, as Paulson graduated from high school, went to college, had his first child, during that time, pretty much all of Paulson's hometown friends killed themselves. They were almost all young men, he says.
You survived.
Yeah.
So there Paulson is, a young man with a lot of dead friends. He's depressed himself, and he has two choices. He can give in, or he can fight to change what's happening. It's around that time that Paulson starts to obsess over something. No one was talking about the suicides, because in Greenland it was taboo to grieve publicly. And his obsession led him to a very unlikely sidekick, a housewife named Atsa Schmidt.
I met Anda in a grocery store, and he said he wanted to talk to me.
Anda Paulson knew that Atsa's son had killed himself and that she never talked about it. So there among the canned goods, Paulson asked her to come to a meeting he was having for parents who had lost a child to suicide. Atsa immediately said no. No way.
And I said, that's too much, I can't do it. But Anda said, yes, you can do it. Of course you can do it. It will help you. You will see it will help you. Come to the meeting with your husband. So I didn't really want to, but we went to the meeting.
At the meeting, Atsa found she was a naturally good listener, and it was clear people needed to talk more. In 1990, Atsa Schmidt and Anda Paulson founded Greenland's first suicide hotline, and Atsa staffed it herself almost every night.
That first night I remember it very clearly because my first call was from a man who needed help. He wanted to commit suicide because his sibling had committed suicide. It was too much for me.
Atsa was overwhelmed. She told the man she wasn't a social worker. He said he understood that, but couldn't she help him? And then Atsa did the only thing she could think of. She found her Bible, and she read him a blessing.
And what did he say?
After the blessing, he was more calm. He said he would call again the next day to talk with me. I could hear his pain.
For the next 18 years, Atze Schmidt answered the phone. I felt some of the things you're feeling, she said to people, and I'm here to listen. For a lot of people, that was enough. Atze Schmidt is 72 years old now. She had to shut down the hotline in 2008 because she's going blind. The same year, the Greenlandic government started a professional hotline. And Atze Schmidt says people do talk about suicide more openly now.
You talk to a lot of people, thousands of people. If you had to guess what the main reasons are that people feel suicidal and lonely and sad, what do you think?
Love. Because some people got a lot of love when they were child, but some people didn't get enough love. So these people, when they meet their partner, they think that he's the world, he's the only one who will ever love them. And when they break up, people feel that their life is over.
Atze says, maybe I was giving them a little love. Love, it's just another way of saying connection, support, the things we all want and need, the things that were destroyed for so many people when Kangik was closed. When a community is disrupted like that, families start to buckle. Alcoholism goes up, child neglect increases, people don't get the love and attention they deserve. These are risk factors for suicide. And then there's something deeper. People lose their identity when their culture, in this case Inuit culture, is demonized and broken down. A lot of young people end up feeling lost, cut off from the old generation, but not really part of the new one. The whole complicated mess is why, for decades, Greenland has had one of the highest suicide rates in the world, and why it's still high today. At this point, everyone in Greenland, and this was something I heard over and over, everyone knows someone who's killed themselves. And about half of Greenlanders say they've considered it. But that last part, I keep thinking about it, because it means that for every person who's died, many more considered suicide and didn't do it. They survived, probably because people helped them. Which means even though suicide is a huge, complicated problem that's going to take decades to fix, individual people, the Atze Schmidts and the Anda Paulsons of the world, they can do something to help. Little heroes in the middle of a big mess. But the question is, what happens now to young people at high risk for suicide in Greenland? What can be done to save them? It was this January when two young people killed themselves. I had just arrived in Greenland. And the deaths, they weren't in the newspapers or on TV. I saw the news on Facebook. Emergency in East Greenland, a friend of a friend wrote. So scared for my family and friends into Tasiilaq. At that point, there had been two suicides in 2 weeks into Tasiilaq, a place with just 3,000 people. Would more deaths follow? So I went there, on a plane and then a helicopter. It was the middle of winter. So this is Tasiilaq.
Yeah.
I arrived in Tasiilaq on a Saturday. The sky was totally clear. If you're imagining Tasiilaq as sad and dark, think again. The mountains around town are pointy and huge. The sun and the snow is so bright that you need sunglasses. In the center of town, there were kids sledding in the streets and playing soccer in snow boots. And one of the first people I reached out to is Julius Nielsen.
Testing.
He describes himself as a father, hunter, electrician,
and family man. Girlfriend the last 20 years. So we have been together since we were teenagers.
Nielsen was a close friend of a man named Pili Christiansen. Pili was this really fun guy, drank a lot, kind of a goofball. On January 9th of this year, they were hanging out, and that day was particularly memorable because there was a polar bear near town. All these guys hunt polar bears for meat and skin, and you can make a lot of money if you shoot one.
And Petey, the stupid guy, he just take the rifle and shoot the polar bear.
That day, Petey shot the polar bear.
He was so happy.
That's what Nielsen remembers. He was so happy. But the next morning, Pili Christiansen was dead. He had killed himself. He was 22.
I don't know why. And I cannot explain why.
Just 2 weeks later, the next death. A 15-year-old boy named Peter Pilinot went drinking with his friends on Friday night. The next morning, his grandparents found his body. This is a scary moment for a town, any town. Two young people dead in 2 weeks, it's a potential indicator that suicide could become contagious, spread among people who are already at risk. Sometimes they're called suicide clusters, and they've happened here in the U.S. too. After the second death, Nielsen was afraid that's what was happening in Tasiilaq. It had happened before. When he was a teenager, he had lost 7 friends to suicide. Now he worried about his kids.
To be a parent in this case, it's a... you feel very powerless, helpless.
A lot of people in Tasiilaq were feeling the same way, powerless, as if the whole town was just waiting for the next person to die. So people started to do things, anything they could think of. The day after the 15-year-old killed himself, Tasiilaq's youth leaders organized a town meeting. A police officer, a social worker, a nurse, and the priest all went. All that next week at school, the guidance counselor met personally with every teenager. But although a lot of the kids cried, no one talked. In fact, it was impossible to get most of the teenagers to open up. And then, a week after Peter's suicide, another teenager tried to kill himself. At that point, a local public health worker called her counterpart in Greenland's capital and said, "We can't do this alone. We need help." Now, ideally, in the U.S., we handle crises like this one by sending teams of psychologists and grief counselors. It's really intensive. But here's the thing about Greenland. There simply are not enough mental health professionals. Only 56,000 people live in the whole country. So they sent what they had, a few social workers and family therapists on 2-week rotations, plus something specifically for the young people in town. A course about how to talk about suicide. All the 10th graders are excused from class for 3 days to do it. The course is being held in a big, loud community hall in the center of Tasiilaq. 15-year-old Paul Ib Wiechereet arrives with earbuds in. He looks a little anxious as he sits down.
Are you nervous?
No. Exciting.
Excited. I follow Paul Ib and his friend Jonas Madsen as they do one of the activities. They're joking around, mostly ignoring me. The assignment is written on these little cards. As they read it, they get really serious. It's a role-playing exercise where one of them has to play a suicidal person. Neither one wants to, so they rock, paper, scissors. Jonas loses, so he has to play the suicidal one. I'm sad, says Jonas. I don't want to live anymore.
You don't have to. I need to go.
Why are you sad, says Paul Ib. Because my girlfriend doesn't like me anymore, says Jonas. I want to kill myself. At that point, neither of them seems to know what to say. They're focusing so completely, it's as if they think if they can just find the right words, maybe they can prevent another death. As the exercise ends and the other kids start to leave the room, they both turn to me and say something they didn't seem able to talk about before the role play.
One of my friends, he killed himself maybe 2 weeks ago. He was a good friend, one of the best friends.
Best friends?
Your best friends.
We support each other.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to help him. Just like I want to support him.
Jonas puts his head in his hands. Paul Ib comforts him. Of course, they're talking about Peter. The 15-year-old boy who killed himself was their best friend. The whole time I was in Greenland, for weeks and weeks, I was trying to understand the numbers behind the suicide crisis. The rate, the highest known in the world, 80 per 100,000. A total population of just 56,000. All the numbers so abstract. And so I would resort to the anecdotal, asking people, what is it like to live in a place with so many suicides? For you, for your family. And most of them settled on the same word, normal. In Greenland, suicide is normal. They don't mean it's okay or that it's not tragic. They mean it's so common that sometimes the next death seems inevitable. But until I met the kids in Tasiilaq, I didn't understand another, deeper part of what it's like. Every suicide steals something from the people who are left behind. A sense of security, resilience. It's one reason suicide everywhere, whether it's the Arctic or right here in the US, is so hard to prevent. Because even as it wipes out one generation, it breaks down the next. For NPR News, I'm Rebecca Hersher.